FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 9/9/19. For those of you with a numerological bent, write me and tell me what that date means, why it's significant. I know if you add three nines together, you get 27, and then you add 2 and 7 is 9, and then 1 is 10, and well, 1 plus 0 is 1. What does that mean, and why should we care? Well, hey, one thing we know is that the national security state, the so-called deep state, the swamp, is alive, perhaps not as well as they were with the advent of Donald Trump as president, but we still got a lot of work to do. Daniel McAdams is with us now from the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, and it's always good to have you on. Daniel, what is the current state of the national security state?
Well, Kerry, first of all, thanks for having me back. It's always great talking to you. A lot of admiration for the work you do. And, you know, the national security state is unfortunately continues to grow regardless of who we elect. And I think in your introduction, you're right that I think President Trump has a lot of good instincts in this area. But I think he's been thwarted since arriving in D.C. I don't think he understood how complete and total the blob is. You know, the experts, the so-called experts, the people, ironically, who get everything wrong and still are called the experts. Imagine any other profession, Kerry. Imagine if your financial advisor always lost you money and you still kept going back to him. It's incredible. And I think, unfortunately, it leads to some bad decisions. We have some bad decisions being made, some with the president not even aware that they're happening. You know, you have people like his national security advisor, John Bolton, who's been caught, as far as my sources tell me, several times freelancing with policies not only does President Trump not know of or aware of, but doesn't even agree with.
Yeah.
So it's a phenomenal situation where you actively go behind your boss's back and do things you know he doesn't want. You know, I spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill, and that's kind of a firing offense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he didn't have a choice, because unlike most presidents who are elected, they've got this core of opportunists, of followers who are part and parcel of the deep state. And in Trump's case, he didn't have a separate group who really saw things for what they were. You know, obviously, Rand Paul instantly became one of his closest advisors. You know, he's been playing golf with Rand, and I think his eyes were opened up, but, you know, he spent basically the past 3 years, 2.5 years in a rear guard action, trying to get rid of these people, purge them out. And sometimes, you know, he'd hire people that he knew were the wrong people, like Bolton, but just an issue of keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Hopefully that's the case. You know, it's amazing. You know, Ron Paul Institute just had a big Washington conference a couple of weeks ago, on the 24th of August, and we had Larry Johnson. I don't know if you're familiar with Larry Johnson. He's a terrific writer. He's a former CIA analyst, and he was speaking at the conference, and he really outlined the CIA-FBI coup against President Trump, and it started while he was still candidate. They literally launched a coup. You know, we talk about how the U.S. interferes in other elections. Well, this was, you could call it the deep state, probably an accurate description. This was the U.S. deep state. This was the U.S. intelligence community, headed up by John Brennan and others, launching a coup to prevent the American voters' will from being reflected in a candidate elected. And I think it's unprecedented. And I'm just praying that when all the smoke clears, or whatever Trump's fault, that's irrelevant. When the smoke clears, I hope there's going to be quite a few people in jail for quite a long time.
Well, they certainly deserve to be. You know, I talked to a guy the other day. What's his name? Victor Tiffany. He's the head of an organization called Bernie or Bust. And I raised the issue with them. You know, they were basically illegally trying to get rid of Trump, stop him before the election and even after. You know, look, every election, I think every campaign is bugged and infiltrated. That's just the way the system has worked. going back to Nixon, we knew that's why Nixon never thought Watergate was a big deal, because he was bugged by LBJ during the 60 election. So he never took it that seriously. But generally, all of that would stop when the person got elected president, and they would put their ambitions or whatever in check or work behind the scenes to further them. Here, the conspiracy went on after he was elected and after he started serving, and that should scare everybody. But this guy, Bernie or Bust guy, had no idea what I was talking about. He said, gee, I'm not really aware of that. I mean, Daniel, wow. How can anybody not be aware of it at this point unless you get all of your news from CNN and MSNBC? There's no way you could not be aware of this, is there?
Well, the sad thing is, and this happened a lot on the left and happens on the right too, is, you know, Trump is a divisive figure. He has a strong personality and a style that a lot of people don't like. But you have these camps where people so viciously hate him, they don't care what he does. They will oppose him because they hate him, and they don't care what's done to remove him from power. They don't care if they're opening a can of worms that's going to affect their candidate afterward. They just want him gone. Of course, there are other people on the right who don't see any of his faults and think he's the reincarnation of Jesus Christ or something.
Yeah.
But you know, so you have these people, I don't care, I just want him out. Whereas a healthy electorate would say, well, here's what I like about what he's doing. Here's what I wish he would do differently. But I'm not surprised that people don't know, because not only, Terry, do people unfortunately still rely on the mainstream media, but those voices like ours in the alternative or independent media are increasingly mm-hmm. silent. They use technology to squash our listenership and viewership. When they can, they will ban us from social media platforms. They're doing everything they can to make sure that the Bernie or Bust guy never has his eyes open so he can continue on happily with his blinders on.
It just shocks me. I mean, you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist here to understand what happened here. This is real. We've seen enough information come out in the media. Now, granted, they might not like to watch Fox News. All right, I'll accept that. And I can understand a lot of their reasons for not doing it. But TheHill.com, a middling to left organization, has been at the forefront of disclosing this. And so many other independent reporters, real journalists, real investigative journalists who we thought ceased to exist, have been exposing this now for 2 years already. I mean, Daniel, how can people be that willfully blind that they just close their eyes to it? Because this can't be good for the political system, regardless where you identify yourself on the political spectrum.
And that's a great point, Kerry, because we do have a lot of good folks on the progressive side who are working hard to expose it. People like Max Blumenthal at the Gray Zone Project, who's done great work. Dan Cohen, who works for him, does great work. What about Professor Stephen Cohen at The Nation? These are all left organizations, but they're not buying into this Russiagate nonsense. They're not fans of Trump, but they at least, as you point out, are good investigative journalists. They're uncovering this BS and they're exposing it. So, you know, I don't want to have a blanket condemnation of the anti-Trump people, because there are some good people who are not taken in by this, and that is encouraging. But of course, as I said in my previous answer, they're trying to squash these people. They don't want to hear their voices. They want to ban them from social media, you know, and cut off their YouTube and this sort of thing.
Yeah. And hey, you know, and that's the big difference between the left and the right. And I say most of the right myself, I'm not so much right. I'm more like you, libertarian, a big admirer of Dr. Ron Paul. I really am. But to me, the truth is the most important thing. And there are certain rules that need to be maintained, a certain political decorum, if you will, that now all of that is out the window.
It's a street fight. But you know what? I think in the end, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Look at the Democrats. They basically have no message. The only thing keeping them from taking over the presidency in the House this time is that the Republicans are apparently even more hapless, unfortunately. But the Democrats, they come forward with, they have no message to counter Trump. And there are plenty of things they could say to appeal to their base. They have nothing to counter him, only that he's a horrible orange man who has to be defeated.
Orange man bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's it.
So, orange man bad.
They spent these 2 years, instead of trying to foment a coup in our own country, If they spent these 2 years developing a decent platform, then Republicans would be sweating blood right now, I think.
Yeah, well, hey, that's a great point. So look at this crop of candidates that are vying to become the Democratic nominee. I was interviewed, I was on Fox and Friends. I said, honestly, none of those people are fit or qualified to wash the toilets in Trump Tower, to clean the toilets. You know, really, they've done nothing. They became politicians because they lack talent and the ability to compete in the marketplace. And some of it's hereditary. But a guy like Bernie, to me, Bernie is the biggest loser of them all because he's a total capitalist. For him, he can have three houses. He can be making millions of dollars on books that I don't know who reads them, but somebody must be, because they do apparently have real sales. But yet capitalism for me, but not for thee.
Yeah. Some are more equal than others. You know? And certainly on the economic front, there's not much to cheer. The only one that really stands out from the blob is Tulsi Gabbard. And of course, we'd agree that a lot of her economic views are not healthy. But certainly when it comes to foreign policy, she is talking about basically what Trump ran on.
Yeah.
And so I think she could be a threat to Trump, but the foolish Democratic Party is doing everything they can to cheat her out of her nomination. They won't even let her on the stage this time, even though she's objectively met the criteria. They won't let her on the debate stage. It's just like what Hillary did to Bernie last time. So cheating and clawing and kicking each other in below the belt, anything they can to get any original thought out of the party. And they think that's going to motivate people to go vote. It's a joke.
Hey, and you know, the person they need to vote for a Democratic nominee is the archetype that I would call her the avatar, even though I hate that word more than you can ever believe, but it's Joe Sixpack. Joe Sixpack, if he doesn't vote or come out in numbers, he and she don't come out in numbers for the Democratic nominee, they're toast, especially if Trump can peel off a lot of victims of the Democratic liberal progressive urban policy, which has left cities, once great cities like Baltimore and Chicago and, you know, all of these cities in shambles.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Silver One Resources is an exploration and development company backed by strategic investors Eric Sprott and SSR Mining. The company is focused on its Candelaria Mine project in Nevada, where there is already a historic resource estimated at 127 million ounces of silver. The Candelaria Mine historically was the highest grade silver producer in Nevada, generating over 68 million ounces of silver at an amazing average production rate of over 1,250 grams per ton. The project has tremendous expansion potential as past drilling has outline deeper, high-grade silver targets for future drill programs. Silver One is highly leveraged to the price of silver and is cashed up and poised to increase shareholder value. Silver One trades in New York under the ticker SLVRF and in Toronto under the ticker SVE. To learn more, go to silverone.com. That's silverone.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yeah, I can imagine them putting something forward to give every San Franciscan 1,200 votes or something like this. It's still not going to be enough. And that's why Trump won. That's why he surprised everyone, because he's an incredible communicator. He is able to tap into the sentiment of middle America like the elites are simply not able to do.
Yeah.
And he reflected people's angst, people's anxiety. People sense that something is wrong in our foreign policy and in our domestic policy. And it was whatever people think about him, it was, as purely political point, it was absolutely brilliant and it worked very well. And I think it will work for him again, because again, his opposition has no clue why he won.
Yeah, that's the thing. They are clueless about it. I've talked to people who are otherwise are very intelligent. And I said, you know, Trump had a brilliant strategy. He didn't win because, you know, somebody accidentally tripped the wrong or punched the wrong Chad on the voting machine. He won because he bypassed the media and brought the media, actually made the media do his bidding. And it was a strategy. It was a brilliant strategy, probably the most brilliant strategy that we have ever witnessed. Maybe going back to Reagan, but even before that, maybe Andrew Jackson, the ability to run a campaign. I mean, you would think the left would be thrilled because Trump did it on a shoestring budget. He's taken the money out of politics. This is what they want, right?
And, you know, Kerry, I speak as a non-voter, so I don't have a dog in the race. But I couldn't help myself cheering every time they attacked Trump. He just benefited from it, you know, and it just drove them crazy. And it was really something that was hilarious and encouraging to watch. But, you know, there are some warning clouds on the horizon. I think that's why Trump is doing his best in places like Afghanistan to try to get us out. He needs to chalk up a couple of victories like that on his belt and try to run on those things, because that's what he promised. And I think we're seeing some encouraging signs this week when you talk about his envoy, Khalilzad, who's apparently, you know, come up with a pretty good proposal for a peace deal with the Taliban to get us out of Afghanistan. That's going to look good on his campaign if he can get this completed. And I don't know if you've been seeing this, but basically they've had a few high-level White House meetings and meetings among Trump's top advisors, and they've told Bolton, you're not welcome. I know he's sitting out, the door's locked on him.
Yeah, well, that's a question. That's an instance. And Trump has even joked about him wanting to start wars with Iran, with Russia, with everybody. I mean, he's good natured about it, but obviously there's some truth in it. And this is an example of keeping your enemies close. I think Trump also likes to hear every view from the most extreme on the right to the most extreme on the left before he makes a decision. I think, you know, he's a guy who's into numbers and information. He doesn't make decisions the way he spits out tweets.
Yeah. Well, I remember early on, he met with Tulsi Gabbard and talked with her, which I thought was pretty interesting, you know. And as you point out, he does regularly, as far as I can see in the media, meet with Senator Paul and chat with him. And the media reports that they get along well. And I think it's certainly a smart move on Senator Paul's part. You know, if you have the ear of the president, you know, a lot of people attack him. Why don't you tell Trump what he needs? You know, you don't do that when you're out golfing with someone. Hey, how dare you do this? You know, it doesn't work that way. And he's in a pretty good position, I think. And all of us non-interventionists should be happy that he does have that ear.
Yeah, thank goodness. You know, and Trump, when you get down to it, he really is a free trader. But he believes that we can't just have all of the wealth sucked out of the country, that it needs to be a level playing field. I know fair trade, and I'm a libertarian and I'm part of Mises.org as well, that they tend to say, well, you know, you're either one or the other. But all of Trump's policies really are geared at opening up trade without tariffs and without non-tariff barriers. That's really what he wants. He doesn't really want to just cut off all imports to the country and have us just export. What he wants is, and it's also part of national security, is to have a trade policy where American companies can compete. And just like, you know, maybe the companies have fallen behind, a lot of them have, certainly the automakers, with the exception of Tesla. But he wants to see the doors opened to American companies and enough protectionism, et cetera.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's a minefield for him because, you know, as we libertarians understand, tariffs are a tax, and they tend to be a tax that affects the poor most directly because they're the least able to afford. You know, when prices go up at Walmart, these are people that are basically on the economic margins. So it is tricky. He has to be careful not to alienate his very base with some of these policies. So it's that's a tough one. And plus, you can't discount. You know, look at this stuff we're hearing from the Fed, from this fellow Dudley and others. You know, that we got to do what we can to keep from getting elected. So you can imagine the pressure of the financial deep state as well on some of this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And many of those people who are on the margins are there because of this unfettered free trade, so-called free trade. It's not free. And their jobs, their companies have left the country in search of cheaper costs without regard to their employees. Now, look, I mean, I believe that a company's only reason for existing is to make profits, but they have to do it ethically, and they have to do it in a way that that everybody benefits from it. Now, I don't know that forcing companies to run factories in the U.S. is the right way, but on the other hand, you don't want to see them being enticed to move factories out to further another company's, another country rather, to further their security or strategic interests, right?
Yeah, sure. And we have to do our best to make this the most attractive place to do business, you know? So we've got to deal with problems like regulation, excessive regulation. You know, from what I understand, if you want to start a business in China, you just start a business here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ironic. Here we have the EPA, the FDA, and all of these alphabet soups on your back that everyone wants a cut. You know, so that's something that does need to be. I think Trump has done a pretty good job. Dr. Paul talks about how Trump has done a good job on removing a lot of these barriers to business and removing a lot of this regulation. And, you know, that's a good first step. Hopefully we'll continue.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you're right, because, you know, the number of regulations that he's done away with and neutering the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and so many pro-energy policies. Yeah, the best way to compete on the world stage is having a free economy here. And obviously, you want companies to act responsibly. You don't want them dumping toxic waste into the local reservoir. I mean, that's things that really are injurious to the country, and really just bad news. So, but yes, it's definitely, he's cut out more regulations than anyone, including Ronald Reagan. But we got a long ways to go to really get the government off of everybody's back. I mean, the reason I moved out of New York is because, you know, you couldn't walk down the street without being harassed by the government.
Yeah, people don't like that as much as you hear everyone wants socialism. When you cut to the core, you know, that's one of the great things about this country. People don't like being pushed around. It's in our DNA. You know, we don't like nosy neighbors. We don't like government poke into our business. And, you know, it's something that the busybodies on the left don't understand. And I think, you know, we have to also, those of us who are not in that camp, we have to remember, too, the vigilance that we have to maintain. You know, we don't want a surveillance state. We don't want the government looking into everything we do. And we have to resist that temptation, to give up our freedoms for the illusion of security.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and so many people would rather have the illusion of security than the reality of freedom. And you know, we know what Jefferson said about that. They wind up with neither. But so the one thing is what you're doing and what the Ron Paul Institute is doing is really reaching out to these younger people and explaining this to them and explaining why they need to be pro-freedom, why they need to be pro economy, if you will, right?
Absolutely. You know, we launched a new project this year, Scholar Seminar, where we're really reaching out to the younger generation and teaching the importance of a foreign policy of freedom, of a foreign policy of non-interventionism, and how this is our future. And it's we've been successful. We're very happy, and we feel good about the next generation, Kerry. I'll tell you, the group that we had there, I have not been as involved with young people as I should be. And I wasn't sure what we were going to get. And I sat down in that room and I launched the seminar, and I saw a group of young people, well-dressed, well-educated, well-prepared, with excellent questions. And I thought, wow, I'm really, really pleasantly surprised to see this.
Yeah, it must have been a breath of fresh air. And you're doing great work here. Really appreciate it. Hey, we want to connect with you, read your work, and follow the Ron Paul Institute. Where do we go?
Well, our website is ronpaulinstitute.org. And Dr. Paul and I do a daily live noon Eastern time broadcast on YouTube. Go to YouTube. Our channel is Ron Paul Liberty Report.
All right. Excellent. Well, we appreciate it. We're big admirers of you and Dr. Paul and the work that you're doing. Somebody's got to advance the cause of freedom, and we can find freedom. If we only look at our history, we can understand how important that is and why it's necessary to really understand the history of the country. Really appreciate what you're doing there, Daniel. and we're behind you 100% of the way. Thanks for coming on. If you got any questions for our guest here, we would love to hear from you. If you've got a question for Daniel, myself, what do you think about freedom? What do you think about the coming generations, the millennials, the Gen Zers? Email us, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Our website is financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Hey, Daniel, it's always great having you on. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much. It's great being with Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.